Good morning, church.
Good morning.
It is a pleasure and an honor to be with you today. It was just shortly after Pastor Brad received his new appointment that he called and wanted to get on my calendar for today, and it's just an honor to be out here with you. I want to share one of my favorite Old Testament stories with you today from the book of Esther. The fourth chapter, I'm going to jump right there in the middle with those names that are hard to pronounce and sound like nothing we use today, but listen to this story of God. Hathach went and told Esther what Mordecai had said, and Esther spoke to Hathach and gave him a message from Mordecai, saying, "All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that if any man or woman goes to the king inside the inner court without being called, there is but one law. All alike are to be put to death. Only if the king holds out the golden scepter to someone, may this person live. I myself have not been called to come in to the king for 30 days. Now, when Mordecai was told what Esther had said, Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, "Do not think that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silence at such a time as this, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another quarter. But you and your father's family will perish. Who knows? Perhaps you have come to royal dignity for just such a time as this." Then Esther said in reply to Mordecai, "Go gather all the Jews to be found in Susa and hold a fast on my behalf, and neither eat nor drink for 3 days, nights or day. I and my maids will also fast as you do, and after that I will go to the king, though it is against the law, and if I perish, I perish." Mordecai then went away and did everything as Esther had ordered him. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. Perhaps you have come to this position for such a time as this. Dare I say, the most famous verse in the book of Esther, perhaps the only verse that's known out of the book of Esther. And if those who even know it comes from this 10-chapter book that ends the historical writings. Come to this position for such a time as this. I mean, that's what stories, movies, books are made of, right? Well, more than that. I want to tell you about Beverly. I met Beverly. She was a lay leader in my student parish. A little 40-person church in a one-stop sign town, not a stoplight, a stop sign. It was a village in the hills of Appalachia, a family church. And as we got ready for vacation Bible school towards the end of that first year that I was there, we had the idea to move vacation Bible school from the church to the church's shelter house that was across the street, thinking that maybe if we held VBS in the open air, maybe that would make it easier for folks to come. We started the week with about 15 or 10, 20 children, and by the end of the week, we had more than 40 who were joining us every night to sing songs, play games, hear stories from the Bible. I graduated and left that, my student parish, and went on to serve in other places. And then a few years later, I got a call from Bev. She says, "They tell me this is impossible and that it's a little too risky. But you know all those kids that keep showing up for VBS? Well, so many of them are not going to have a Christmas. And so God's really put it on my heart that we collect new and gently used toys for the children in our community. You know, that's only about 50 kids. We should be able to gather enough toys, right?" Well, we kept in touch. And by the time the toy giveaway came, they had more than 300 toys. They were able to give a couple of toys to every child in the village. Word had spread, so it wasn't just kids from the village who came, but ones from the surrounding area as well. They all got toys, and they had toys left over. So someone went and rented a U-Haul truck and packed up the remaining toys and sent them down to Meigs County, which was even more impoverished. Impossible, her friends had said. Way too risky if we don't get enough toys, others had said. But Bev found herself in a perhaps you have come to this place, to this moment, to these people, to this challenge, for just such a time as this. If we look around, we see those situations that cry for persons who come to a position for just such a time as this. Global challenges around intercultural understanding and poverty and disease and climate change. Challenges in the church around biblical interpretation and unity and inclusivity. Local challenges like homelessness and the hold that alcohol and drug have on our youth and adults. Not to mention I-75 corridor right in our backyard. That's the main thoroughfare for human trafficking in the United States. We know that challenges can also show up in our lives in unexpected places. That unexpected phone call, the unanticipated knock at the door, the family member who sits down to talk and has that look on their face, the friend or coworker who pokes their head in your office door. We know that these situations lay dormant in our everyday fabric of our lives. Relationships that are less than functional, work that saps life rather than giving it, schedules packed full of activity, issues and differences that are complex and controversial and impossible to deal with, says our pride. Way too risky, says our experience. Pointless, says our reason. Impossible. Risky, pointless. Those were just the beginning reactions when Esther got that message from her cousin Mordecai. They were living in Susa, one of the capitals of the Persian Empire. This was about 600 years before Christ, and the Jewish people had been overrun by the Chaldeans and taken into exile in Babylon. 50 years later, Babylon was conquered by the Persians, and the Jews were allowed to return home. Sweet. But some of the Jews chose to stay there in Babylon. You see, they discovered something important. God didn't just live in the land of Israel. Go figure. God was in Babylon too. Mordecai and Esther were among those Jews who stayed. But living as a Jew in the heart of the Persian Empire was risky business. Straight away, we meet the king, and we find the most powerful man in the world to be reckless, extravagant, and easily manipulated. Now, that's dangerous because when he passes a law, that law cannot be changed, even if it turns out to be a disaster. And so, when Haman, Mordecai's archenemy, rises to the post of prime minister, Haman manipulates the king into issuing a decree that will wipe out not just Mordecai, but all Jews in the empire. Now, Israel is still part of the Persian Empire at this point, so the king's decree threatens to eliminate the Jews from history altogether. But there's one hope, a faint hope. One tiny thread that holds them up from the abyss. 5 years before that, Mordecai's cousin and adopted daughter, Esther, without revealing her true identity, has joined the king's harem. She underwent a year-long grooming process to prepare her for her one-night stand with the king. And the king liked her so much, he made her queen. But that wasn't quite all it seemed to be, because the king still keeps his harem. and no one, not even his queen, gets to address him without being summoned as he waves his golden scepter. If you approach the king without that, you're going to be put to death, even if you're queen. So this is the context for Mordecai and Esther's conversation. I am sure Esther's pride said, impossible. I'm sure her experience counseled, too risky. And I'm sure that her reason concluded, that is pointless. And yet Esther responded yes to God's call through Mordecai. So how do we recognize and claim those just such a time as this moments for ourselves? Esther, despite being queen, is so isolated she doesn't even know the Jews are due to be exterminated in a few months' time. It takes Mordecai to tell her of the catastrophic decree. And he says, look, you are the only one can do something about this. Do you feel Esther's stomach muscles tighten, her breath getting short? She just wants to escape. But you don't realize, if I approach the king without him calling me, I'm dead meat. Mordecai says coolly, what makes you think you're going to survive this if you don't? God will turn this thing around, and God's chosen people won't be annihilated, but it'll be too late for you and me. You thought it was for saving yourself that you're here, but God thought it was for saving God's people. Maybe God put you here in this place for exactly this moment with these people for just such a time as this. Esther couldn't begin to say yes to God until she was aware of the need and the situation around her. And then once aware, she had a decision to make. What does Esther do in her decisive moment? She stops denying, stops ignoring, stops making excuses, stops running away. She realizes that this needs more than her own strength. So she goes back to those devotional habits of her people, those things that had been passed down from generation to generation, and calls on all the Jews to fast with her, to pray with her, to become focused on God and on God's will. First, she needed awareness. Then she needed to become centered. And that led her to respond. Esther resolves that she will face up to her responsibility and go to the king while the golden scepter lays at his side. She recognizes that she must do this and disclose her true identity as a Jew. She takes stock of the realities of the situation and says simply, if I perish, I perish. She stares pride in the face. She teaches experience a lesson, and she shares a new logic with reason. She goes to the heart of the empire to save the Jewish people. She says yes to God, and she becomes a Messiah for her people. She is Christ for them. Don't miss the fact that in this Old Testament book that doesn't even mention the name of God, we have a mini gospel here. The great king, ruler over practically the whole world, is a clumsy parody of God. Mordecai is a kind of Adam whose pride puts his whole people at the point of death. And Haman is a kind of Satan. But Esther is a kind of Jesus, at the right hand of God, laying down her life for the salvation of the Jews. It may seem a mixture of courage, charm, contrivance, luck, but Esther saves her people, and the king issues a new decree that enables the Jews to live another day. Impossible, said pride. Risky, said experience. Pointless, said reason. But Esther said yes. I've had the opportunity to meet a few Esthers in my day. One of them goes by the name of Eileen. She lives down in Athens. She's a member of First UMC Church there, a church that I was privileged to pastor for a number of years. But about two decades ago, Eileen's heart was broken for those with food insecurity, those who didn't always know where their next meal was coming from, because in the affluence of Athens, they sat in the heart of Appalachia. But Eileen was a member of what was known as the country club church, and those kind of people just didn't come in the door of the church. And yet, Eileen started a weekly Monday lunch ministry. She got connected with others in the community, and soon, each day of the week, there was a meal, a free meal, being offered. Eileen was an Esther to those people. I've also met an Esther who goes by the name of Sarah. She attends a suburban church, a church in a wealthy suburb of Columbus, and her heart breaks for the families in her neighborhood. She has four rambunctious toddler boys, bless her heart. They're into grade school now. But she got to see how busy all the families were around her and how they always, their weekends were always spent traveling to this game or that contest or that tournament. Sarah and her husband decided that they were called to bring Upward Basketball to their church. So they began that ministry a couple years ago. This past week at our West Ohio Annual Conference, Sarah and her husband were recognized with the Lay Harry Denman Award for Evangelism because through her actions, they brought 40 families and all their kids into the church. They met them where their need was, and now those children and their families are coming to know Christ. Also at our annual conference, we celebrated the 60th anniversary of the ordination of women in the United Methodist Church. Back in 1956, there was a general conference. And for years before that, several decades, each year, this issue of full clergy rights for women would come up. Susanna Wesley, John Wesley's mom, was the model teacher, even preacher, back in the 1700s. And John himself had licensed women to preach. And yet there they were in 1856. Women were allowed to preach, but they weren't to be full members of the conference. They couldn't be appointed to any church or hold position within the conference. There were more than 2,000 petitions that year concerning the full clergy rights of women. And when the majority report came to the conference, it was that women who were single or widowed could get full clergy rights, but not if you were married, and certainly not if you had children. The minority report that came to the floor of General Conference recommended that there be no change, that women not have full clergy rights. There's a transcript of the debate that's posted at umc.org. And as you read down the debate that lasted more than a day and a half, somewhere in there was an Esther who was an African-American clergyman by the name of C. Anderson Davis. He's the one who put the motion on the floor to remove the restriction of only single or widowed women. The vote was taken 389 to 297. And for the first time, women became eligible to apply for full conference membership with full clergy rights 60 years ago, this past May. I stand here today because of that Esther. And I shared a house this past week with a Mordecai who goes by the name of Valerie, one who looked at me and said, "I see in you a sister in the ministry." The morning before I left, I ran into Bev that I mentioned in the first story. Bev is going to licensing school this summer. She called me her Mordecai. What a blessing. You see, the heart of this story lies in those echoing words, which I hope make your stomach tighten and your breath falter just as much as if Mordecai were saying them to you today. Perhaps you have come to this place, to this moment, to these people, to this challenge for a time such as this. Think about yourself. We all have those things with which we've been given and those things which we lack. Think about the context you're in, the ways that you feel powerless, the number of times you've said, "What my workplace needs, or what Xenia needs, or what faith community needs, or what my family needs." The number of times you've thought there was nothing or no one that could do anything about it. Because, you know, it's impossible, says your pride. Oh, it's way too risky, says your experience. Pointless, says reason. Oh, it's way too risky, says your experience. Pointless, says reason. And then you hear that exasperating voice of Mordecai. He taps you on your shoulder and says, "Perhaps you've been given these skills, these experiences, these privileges and deprivations, so that just at this very moment, you can do what no one else could do. You could be what no one else could be. God made you just as you are because God wanted someone just like you. And all this happened. You came to be here for just such a time as this." Esther listened. Esther centered herself on God's will, and Esther knew that being gifted and called was not all there was to being a beloved child of God. She responded as well. Will you? Will you dare to follow the Spirit's guiding and be as Christ to someone else? Will you be the hands and feet of Christ where there is a need? Will you realize the reality of your situation? Seek all the help you need. Plan carefully, fast, pray fervently, and put yourself in the hands of God, the one who has put you right here, right now, for a time such as this.